Welcome to the Wealthy, Wealthy, Wise podcast. If you would like to listen in on thought-provoking conversations with countercultural thought leaders and experts in the fields of wealth, health, and relationships, the three keys to having what I call a wealthy, wealthy life, then this is the show for you. I'm Christina Wise, real estate investor, best-selling author of Falling for Money, and founder of Wealthy Wealthy, where I serve as your personal guide to money, health, and happiness. Welcome back. This is Christina Wise, your host. In this episode, I interview Dr. Shiroko Sokic, a functional and integrative medicine doc who recently released her new book called Healing When It Seems Impossible. Dr. Sokic is an MD trained as a general surgeon in the Western medicine world, and she's an acupuncturist and trained in many Eastern modalities of medicine as well. Her specialty is combining the two in order to treat her patients and clients with the best protocols offered in both philosophies. She works to diagnose and treat mystery illnesses that plague many other doctors. We talk about the differences between Western and Eastern medicine. She talks about the science of energy and how important it is in healing. And she shares what she has found to be the number one healing modality to be most effective in treating illness and helping people heal from trauma and disease. You'll have to listen to find out what that secret modality is. If you or anyone you know is suffering from a mystery illness, you'll want to listen in. Enjoy my conversation with Dr. Shiroko Sokic. Oh my goodness, I'm so excited for our conversation today. Thank you so much for being here. To get everyone started, I'm really excited to talk to you because you are really a unicorn in so many capacities in the healing world as a healer. And you're both a medical doctor, fully trained as an ER doctor, an MD, and very much trained in the Western science of medicine. And while you, it looks like, but while you were pursuing that, you also had an equal love of Eastern medicine and Chinese medicine, and factored in what would maybe be the Western world is more new agey stuff like acupuncture or cranial sacral or some more alternative integrative bioidentical hormones. And so you studied and practiced both of these disciplines, which almost confront one another in some cases. So I'd love from your point of view, tell us your story. Tell us about you. Like what started you to be a healer, to be a doctor? What brought you into both of these philosophies and modalities? And who are you? If you just share that with the audience before we dive into what you know.
Sure. Yes. Well, who am I? Well, it all began when I was 5 years old. So I started pretty young. My great grandmother was my very best friend in the world. And when one night I was visiting her, she lived right next door to my mom and grandma, and we were living with my grandma at the time. And she collapsed in front of me, and I couldn't wake her up. And so I sent, I got my mom and my grandma, and they called an ambulance, and she was taken away. And I never got to see her alive again. And one day my mom came and told me, like a few days later, my mom came and said that she was dead and that her heart had stopped beating. And I did not know what that meant, but I imagined, like, first, of course, devastated, but not really understanding. So I started imagining how to fix it. And I imagined a machine that would make her heart start beating again. And I think in that moment, something woke up in me that was like, I believe in healing. I want healing to happen. And I began the search for what that would take. Fast forward many years. I mean, that day I decided I wanted to be a doctor. And I was pretty unwavering throughout my childhood with that desire, with a few little glitches. But then in medical school, the first time I got to save a life was in a surgical emergency when a patient was brought in with a gunshot wound, and I got to help save his life. And it was amazing, you know. So I was working in the emergency department at the time, and they thought I did a good job. So they invited me to apply for surgical residency. So I did that. And then in my surgical residency, I had experiences and kind of reached my own sort of personal midlife crisis at age 27 and realized that there was saving a life and then there was living a life. And there were many things that I saw with my patients and in my own life. I began to see that I couldn't just work 24/7, which is what you do as a surgical resident. I couldn't just do that. And then I also realized that there were a lot of people in pain and struggling. Even then, I saw mysteries and people who had problems that we couldn't solve, and issues that we couldn't make better with the best of what medicine had available, because we were in a university center. We had the best. And so I began to question what I was doing. And somebody gave me this book on Chinese medicine called The Web That Has No Weaver. And I started to read it, and I just fell in love with the idea, because there's this beautiful idea in healing and energy and all of that. And so I started looking for how to study Chinese medicine. And so I decided to leave my surgical residency because I didn't feel like that was the right thing for me. And then went to work in the ER, and then I went to acupuncture school. And every semester I would have this like experience of, why am I in school? What am I doing? I've been in school for already, you know, 25 years or something. But then something would happen, either in a patient in the ER where they'd have a mystery that Chinese medicine explained, or something would happen in a patient in my body or in a patient's body that I could make sense of with acupuncture or Chinese medicine. And so I just kept going, and it was like I kept getting these signals, and I just kept studying. And towards the end, I began to dream of having a center, a medical center that would combine the best of both the West and the East. And so when I graduated from acupuncture school, I moved to California and sort of eventually found my community and people and started building a practice.
That's awesome. So there's a couple things that you said that really stood out to me there. One, it's almost the idea of healing versus fixing. And when we go into these acute situations, like go to the ER, and ER say the doctors, you guys save lives, right? In a very acute situations, gunshot wound. And yeah. So it's fixing that very acute situation. Yeah. And then there's a healing process that would be attached to that. But I think a lot of, I know when I was sick and I was going to more traditional, all traditional medicine, that was it. I was wanting to go in to be fixed. Healing wasn't in my mind, whatever. It's like, fix me, fix me, fix me. And traditional medicine couldn't fix me because I was on a healing journey. I wasn't on an acute fix me situation, right? So Can you describe from your point of view the difference between feeling and fixing? Because fixing, you know, our body is energy and yeah, it's doing what it's doing, but you're going in there to save a life, as opposed to how much of it is fixing versus how much it is that when we are found, when we find ourselves in a health crisis, it's more of a healing journey, which is more energetic, and these underlying things that Chinese medicine ascribes to that traditional doesn't. Can you line these up side by side, since you have your feet in both these worlds?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I love fixing. So, and I think actually in acupuncture, like a surgeon, you know, cuts into something and changes your structure in moments, right? That's a huge shift in energy. With acupuncture, you put needles in. So in a similar way, changing the structure of the energy rather quickly, but maybe more subtly, and then creating a change in someone's body. Fixing to me implies that something is broken or, you know, not working. And healing is you describe it as a journey. It really is a journey. It's like something is out of balance, and it came out of balance in a certain way, right? And usually we suddenly have an experience of something. When we hit a crisis, we suddenly have an experience of major emotional, physical trauma, right? But if you look back, and I do this when I interview my patients, if you look back, there's a story that's been evolving, and your body's been knocking on your door and saying something for a while, and you haven't heard it. And so the healing journey is really sort of this. It's a call from your life. I like to call it a call to adventure. I like to call the healing journey a hero's journey, because you don't know the outcome in the end, and you don't really necessarily know where you're going. And a hero is looking for a major change, but may not know what's going to happen in the end. You know, like I love those hero movies, like The Lord of the Rings, you know. He has to get that ring and he has to throw it into the volcano. But the whole journey in between is this crazy traumatic event, right? And sometimes when you're not feeling well, you go through this huge journey of discovering things about yourself emotionally, discovering things about yourself physically, discovering maybe what started it, maybe not, you know, so like, but it becomes this unraveling, unfolding, and you become a new person at the end. You're transformed by that journey.
And I mean, what you say is exactly what happened to me, but it was this more than a desire. I was compelled, because physically I was breaking apart and I wanted to be fixed because I was dying. And I just wanted to go and get fixed, like just make me who I was before. But that's not what the journey was meant to be. The hero's journey was like, no, you've been ignoring all these spiritual, emotional, and all these underlying things and treating your body badly in a way that's not sustainable and, you know, taking advantage of this beautiful gift that we're giving in this body. So mm-hmm. those physical parts were breaking down. But underneath that I had to heal. It wasn't the physical was just brought to my attention so that I could go heal the emotional, spiritual wounds that I never would have addressed if I didn't find myself in this health crisis that gave me the opportunity to do so much healing that I needed and then transformed as a different human being out of it. And it was hell and black and dark and ugly and horrible. And I just wanted out of it as soon as possible. But it took me years to find myself in this crisis. So it took that time to journey a way out of it. But so many of us, I think, and you see this work every day, like the lesson afterwards, like, oh, wow, being in the crisis of it is the work to be done that's so much deeper than physical. Do you find that on a pretty normal basis?
Yes. Yeah. It's always much more than physical. I mean, I think of ourselves as a unit, right? We're not just physical. We're emotional, spiritual. We're spirits that live in bodies, right? And we have to figure out how those bodies work, really. And some people have more difficulty with that than others, but it's always about finding the direction that your body will agree with.
So if we're to, again, if we're going to go side by side and more the traditional and Eastern, obviously you're integrating the two to this blend of the beauty of both of these that serve purposes. Where is it, let's say, in just the traditional medicine mindset, where is it different than your mindset? So those that, let's say, go to just traditional medicine that has no connection to the Eastern or any of the other philosophy and practice that you bring into your practice, what would they be, what would one experience maybe, or like, or what's just the difference of mindset between Eastern and Western? Or let me change that up. What's just the mindset of Western that they would maybe even say, you're cuckoo or woo-woo, or that's ridiculous.
Right. So, I mean, you can look at it in many different ways. I'm going to give you a couple perspectives. One is this perspective of wellness. So here's perfectly well and nothing's wrong, right? And then you come over and then you start feeling crummy and you come to this end of the spectrum where you really, really, really feel crummy and you end up in a doctor's office. And first of all, in Chinese and Western medicine, there's like this much overlap. So to me, there's areas where I see parallels and overlap. And so, and sometimes I'll end up way over here and sometimes I'll end up way over here, but here's the little bit of overlap. But when you're up here in Western medicine, this is where tests that we conventionally use start to show things that you could be feeling crummy all the way in this perspective, depending on your sensitivities and what is going on, the tests won't show anything. And then you'll be told, because these are the tests that in conventional medicine, even, that will give us a diagnosis, if you will. In my functional medicine world, there's a level where there's a whole bunch of other tests that we can do that show more. And so here's the conventional medicine test, here's the functional medicine test, and then there's still an area where there's no test that will show anything, but Chinese medicine might. So, and it's becoming more and more common that people have mysterious problems that we cannot diagnose in Western medicine. And that's, there's a statistic that 30 million Americans have undiagnosed medical problems. And I find it even more common because I see so many patients who've been to 5 or 6 or 7 doctors. So there's that perspective. And then there's the training that we have as physicians. And we are taught to rely on a certain kind of science. And I think we are taught to rely on our five senses. So what we can see, smell, touch, taste, you know, like hear, those five senses are very concrete physical elements. And if it doesn't show up in those within that perspective, if a person is locked into that perspective, they're not going to see outside of that box, right? And in Western medicine, quite commonly, that's what's happening. You know, like here's what we see, touch, hear, feel, and that's all we can rely on based on science. But then there's all these other ways of looking at things that have to do with energy, or that have to do with the belief that there's a spirit in our bodies, or that there's emotions that impact our bodies. And more commonly, we're able to see that. More and more common conventional medicine role of stress, which is basically emotions, in our health, you know, because there's tons of research that shows that is true. So there's an opening where more and more physicians are open to alternatives. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that does. And it's so true, again, from my own personal experience, is that I had all these symptoms, like massive hair loss and loss of weight, and I couldn't think. And I, like, all these symptoms were real, yet they didn't show up on a test. So ultimately, the doctor said, it's in your head. So I found myself being prescribed medicine, like antidepressant medicine, anti-anxiety medicine, sleep medicine, this medicine. So all these prescriptions, just saying, it's in your head. Like, there's nothing that shows up on a test. So clearly, this isn't real, type of thing. So then I felt worse and worse, and the symptoms kept getting bigger and bigger, yet because they wouldn't show on a test, there was no solution other than to take another prescription and keep adding on. And then I was just one big load of prescriptions, and I wasn't getting better, I was getting worse. So yeah. You're so right, again, from my own personal experience, is that it wasn't on the conventional test, it was on these other type of tests that showed, wow, my hormones, adrenal fatigue hormones, were completely out of balance. My neurotransmitters were completely screwed up. Metal poisoning, you know, that wasn't even factored into any of the testing. So it was this whole different type of, like you say, testing combined with the spiritual work that the acupuncture and re-energizing and the time it took, and addressing the traumas and addressing these other things that were an equal part of my quote unquote illness that doesn't show up on a test anywhere, right?
Right. Yeah.
So you said something else here that I really like, that I'd love for you to go a little bit deeper into what you mean by that. The difference between save a life and living a life.
Big, big difference, right? Well, not entirely, because there are some times when you may not even know that your life is in danger, you know? And I've been through many of my own personal things that have shown me that, you know? So saving a life, like for me, you know, having been in the ER and a surgeon, literally you are at death's door. And if something doesn't happen, you're going to die in that moment, you know, a gunshot wound or a heart attack or a huge asthma attack where you can't get air, or, you know, things like that, where somebody's going to, or an allergic reaction to something where you could die in a moment. So that's saving a life, you know, like taking you from death's door and putting you back to life, right? And thrilling when it happens. But then there's living a life. And for me at the time that I was being a surgical resident, I was single. And my belief about myself was that I wasn't worth much if I was single. Like, I was worth more as a partner in a relationship. And so I thought, well, I could just work and work and work and work until, you know, until somebody comes along who's going to save me from my life. But then I began to realize that I couldn't live like that. I had to actually live a life, even if I was single, and define myself from something else, right? And I've had several lessons in that in my life, because it's one of my things that I felt like I was meant to have a soulmate, and then didn't. And then I met the guy that I thought was my soulmate, was married to him for years, and then that ended. And when it ended, again, I had to redefine my whole life. That was just 10 years ago. So it was a whole new definition of my life. But living life is finding what you love to do, finding your passion, finding your mission on earth and filling yourself up with that. And it all comes from inside of you, you know, and so health comes from inside of you and passion and vibrancy and the things that drive you, if they come from inside of you, then you are filled with your life and then you are living your life. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And it's so beautiful. And, you know, with that, how much from your perspective, when it comes to, let's say, disease or illness physically, you know, even in this, let's say, biohacking craze and perfect health craze and the exact right diet and arguing is over keto better or is the fireman's diet better or is, I don't know, paleo better? And, you know, what, you know, are you getting your IV treatments? Are you doing this and all these hacks and technologies? And so we have so many new, all this new technology and tools and knowledge and information available that we could be, let's say, if we did all this checklist of things that are available, we could be, let's say, quote unquote, in perfect physical health, but we're still experiencing, people are still bumping up against, they don't feel well, right? They don't have the energy. They're not living their life in a way, like something feels off or wrong, even though they're hitting all the check boxes of listening to everything to do physically. So in your world, like how much of it, even if you're doing everything quote unquote right on the physical world, you're exercising, you're taking your supplements, you're eating great food, you know, you're, I don't know, getting your IV treatments here and there and these other things, getting some stem cells, who knows, these different technologies that are available today. How much of it, if we're off emotionally, if we're off spiritually, if we have toxic relationships, if the self-love, self-worth piece isn't there, if we're just stressed out because we're in the 24/7 game to try to be somebody, you know, to prove ourselves and in that game, how much in your world do you see that if this other side, even if the physical side is way on, but this other side of life is way off, how much of that still creates the same level of disease, discomfort, or discord?
You know, I had a theory about that at one point, triggered by an experience, but I feel like the physical elements and lifestyle and all of those things add up to 50%. And then the rest is 50%, the spiritual, the emotional, the finding balance. And you're right, there are some people who, like, even though they may not believe in Western medicine, have a very technical approach to health. You know, hacking, I love the biohacking, is like you do these things, science shows that these, so it's still relying on science. And one of the reasons I love Chinese medicine is it's about energy and it's about flow, and energy has to move. And there's a theory there's a statement that I learned early in my training that was, you know, disease comes from either inside your body or outside. And all disease that comes from outside is basically infections and, you know, things that attack you from outside. But then you have the inside, and that's all originates from emotions. So the imbalances start with emotions. And a lot of people describe emotions as energy in motion, right? So something sets off an energetic movement inside of your body, which then can create imbalance. And so if you have an emotion that you're not dealing with, or a trauma that came from your childhood that you didn't deal with, something like that, it will affect your body energetically and then eventually physically.
Yeah, because just being in, you know, some of the biohacking world, for example, like everybody has the Aura ring. So they've got all the data and all the statistics. But what's not on the Aura ring is love, compassion, empathy, touch, just true connectivity. So maybe have all the right data and, you know, we're sleeping the right amount, getting, you know, having the right number of steps in and, you know, whatever the data may track on a physical side. But isn't like the biggest missing piece is how much love, connectivity, positive emotions, gratitude, appreciation, passion, love, engagement, yet we're behind our computers, we're alone, and there's just this disconnect that at the end of the day, how much of that piece is part of the suffering that's throwing, like you said, the body out of balance because this can't be tracked on a ring, for example.
Right. Right. Yeah. And even that has been scientifically documented. You know, how much gratitude do you have? Are you grateful enough? And then there's the, you know, the whole, what is that? A law of attraction, you know, if you're thinking the right way, but even thinking the right way sometimes doesn't lead you to whatever it is you need. So I look at it on a number of different levels. First of all, if you have a physical challenge, and again, many of my patients do have, that's why they come to me, and it's difficult. It's because there's something you're meant to learn. There's some experience you're meant to have, and your soul and your spirit live in your body, but you have a mission. And whatever that mission is, if you're not on it, or if you're like meant to learn something, then your body will start talking to you and it will start giving you information. So that in my book, I have the 7 keys, and you've already touched on love. Love is the first key to fill yourself up with love as an approach to healing, to have love for yourself, to have love for your body, to have faith that your body is doing what you need, that your body is your friend. I always tell people your body's not stupid, you know, especially when you have an autoimmune condition, your immune system is attacking you. And we often approach that as our immune system is attacking us because it's stupid. It's not stupid. There's a reason it's attacking you. And we got to find that reason. Now, sometimes our science hasn't caught up with our ability to find what we need to find in a person's body. I usually believe that an autoimmune condition comes from some kind of infection or some kind of thing that came in from outside, and then it hides in your body, and then your immune system, smart, is trying to get rid of it. But we haven't found it in our science, you know, necessarily. So we don't know what the immune system is attacking. We just know the immune system is attacking. And if we get angry at our bodies and we feel betrayed by our bodies, or we think that our body should be like a car, you know, it's supposed to run, it's supposed to get us where we want to go, it's supposed to leave us alone and not bother us. That's what we think about our bodies, right? You know, just leave me alone. I gave you the right fuel. I gave you the right, you know, exercise. Leave me alone. I don't want to be bothered by you. But that's not how our bodies are. Our bodies are there to help us understand things and to help us see, just as we have relationships that are sometimes difficult with other people. Those are challenges that we are meant to deal with so that we can grow and learn. Well, our body also challenges us to help us grow and learn. And if you have that approach from an angle of love, then it will help you. Same with believing that you can get well, you know, so like having this belief in your ability to get well will help you on that journey. That makes sense?
Totally makes sense. Absolutely. And so how much, like you said, that's the number one key. How much of healing is love? I mean, nobody talks about love as part of healing. And how do you, in your practice, how do you fit that in? Do you just, you know, prescriptively, like how do you prescribe love, for example?
Well, whenever people tell me things, I show them another way to look at it, because there's always another way to look at something, you know? So, you can be angry at your body and you can be angry that you have certain symptoms, or you can say, okay, my body's trying to show me something, and approach it from an angle of curiosity rather than anger, and go, okay, well, if my body were my friend, what would it do? You know, like that kind of, what would Jesus do? Well, what would my body do if it was acting like it was my friend? Well, it would be telling me something. So what would it be trying to tell me? And that, you know, just asking yourself questions. And then also, love has so many layers, you know, so there is science. There's an institute called the HeartMath Institute, and they've been researching the effect of love and the effect of what we do with our hearts for as long as I've been in practice, like 25, 27 years. And they have a lot of science that you can change your DNA with love. This has been shown, you know, that you can change anything with love. So how much does love play a role? It plays 100% role in everything. If you start to approach things, it's the most, one of my friends says, the healingest force in the universe. Bad English, but well done, you know, like, because it is the healingest force. It is the force that holds everything together. And it's kind of the glue, the matrix of the universe. So if we come from an angle of love, there's so many possibilities. It's how we relate to others, how we relate to ourselves, how we relate to our bodies, how we relate to the things that we do. If you love your computer, it'll behave better than if you just treat it like it's a tool that has to do what you want it to do. You know, There's energy in everything, and there's this connection. One of my big discoveries in my own thinking is like, or like just putting things together in a different way, is but every cell in your body is communicating with every other cell. And so that it's love that holds us together. And it's the love that those cells have for one another that holds them together. And if we keep loving, and my ex-husband used to say that I should write a book about, because I used to pet myself. And sometimes I still do, you know, like I'll be in the middle of the night and I'll just stroke my arm to sort of help me relax. But that's putting love on my cells. And you can just do that. I didn't think about it consciously at the time, but that is just a little way to, you know, kind of, and you can do that for yourself. You can just, if you have an area that hurts, you can just hold it and say, tell it you love it. One of my patients was telling me that she did that with something that was really bothering her. I can't remember what it was, but she would just, her belly. She was having belly aches. And she would hold her belly and just tell it she loved it. And she had tried many different things, like you're saying, like different modalities. She had tried medications. She tried different supplements and different tests. Nothing was working. So one day she just started rubbing her belly and say, I love you, belly. I love you. And over the course of a few days, it started to feel better. Because that's what pulls things together. That's what provides the force for the healing. And how I do it in my office is different with every person, you know, but first of all, I love all my patients. And I invite people who want to be my patients to meet me for 15 minutes for free so that they can see if they feel a connection. Because whoever heals you or whoever helps you, it's a team, right? We're a team and we're working together to help you get to a new place. And you want to feel a connection. You want to feel safe. You want to feel like you're taken care of. So I put all of my energy into each of my patients to make sure that they feel safe, that I'm taking care of them in the best way I can. I have my staff. My staff is amazing. They're loving, amazing, kind people. And so I set up that environment. And I put that forth, you know, I often give my patients my cell phone number so that they can text me or ask questions if they need to, you know, just because healing's not, it's not something where, you know, you get a prescription, you go home and you do it. You may have questions that come up. You may have issues that come up and you may need understanding that you don't have, because it's not necessarily a straight line from here to here, you know, so.
Well, that makes me think it, just the way the medical system is set up in a way, you know, with insurance and the different things, the doctors, they have to hit 15 minutes in and 15 minutes out. So you're saying, hey, come for 15 minutes just to see, make sure there's an energetic connection because I'm your healer, as opposed to I need to get you out in 15 minutes because I need to hit that next patient to get reimbursed. And there's no love in that. That is the machine. That's like, how fast can I listen, try to diagnose and give a prescription or that type of thing and get out and move to the next. And just now, like the way you're talking about this, that there is no love in that machine at all. It's quite the opposite. And so you leave there. Well, that didn't work. Maybe I go to the next one or the next one. And the most important ingredient, your number one key, is it's absent. Mm-hmm. And we want to feel safe, right? Like when we do go and we have some sort of crisis, any crisis we're in, part of that is that where is the safety? Like I'm asking for help. Can you help me? Not can you just get me in and out and, you know, move me on to the next as part of the assembly line or something.
Right. Yeah.
And another thing you said that I really love, it's the, you know, I think we're conditioned that one, our body and selves are the same thing. So we're not actually thinking about our body in a way to love our body, to take care of our body, to listen to our body, to spend time with our body in a relationship to it, as opposed to it's just this thing we're in or we are. And so I hear you really separating the two. Like, no, there's yourself and your spirit, and then your body is like this container. But love your body because it's there for you, not just physically so you can walk around and perform and do things. But I love what you said. Like, our bodies are here giving us missions and telling us things. So how much is the intuition part of this and the listening? Like, what do you see that our bodies are telling us? Is there anything you see in your practice on more of a regular basis, like something that's maybe 80% of the time that you find to be the case is like, oh yeah, here's another the same. Is it in this realm?
Everybody is so unique. I'm not sure that there's an 80% of the time. I mean, love is a big piece of that whole thing. And learning to listen to your body is one of the seven keys. It's the fourth key. I kind of call it one of the hearts of the thing because you have experiences in your body and you learn to find physical balance. That's the second key. And then you find your own unique lifestyle and you blend that with learning to listen. But your body's talking all the time. I am actually teaching a little class about learning to listen to your body, sort of deep dive into it this coming month. And there are so many elements to that, you know, ways of exploring what's happening to you. And you know, then people say, well, I'm too busy to explore what's happening to my body, right? But if your body's talking out loud and you're in pain or you're struggling, then exploring your body and listening to it is what you need to do. You know, it's talking because it wants you to pay attention, right? So you have to start to pay attention to that. And I teach all of my patients. So there's some elements of Chinese medicine that make listening to your body sort of easier. Like each organ has physical functions and emotional and spiritual functions that are different than Western medicine, but you can learn those fairly easily. They're in the book, in the chapters, the different elements that need to be explored. So in listening to your body, for example, the liver regulates the smooth flow of energy in your whole body. It regulates your menstrual cycles and it deals with the emotion of anger. And it is the master sergeant of getting things done. So we in the West, we're quite liver oriented, right? We tend to be frustrated, angry, want to get a lot of stuff done and on a mission. And so women who have problems with their periods could be having imbalances in their liver. If you have tension in your neck and shoulders or tension in your hips, things like that, those are areas where if your liver is out of balance, you might have symptoms. So then you can begin to ask questions of like, what's out of balance? What's going on? And begin to sort of understand yourself. And in understanding, when you have understanding, it brings so much peace. I think that's one of the issues when people have undiagnosed conditions or feel like they don't have answers. And if you don't know what's going on, then there's this agitation, right? This anxiety, because what is going on? And maybe it's much more serious than you think. So if you can come from the angle of, okay, wait, let me ask a question. Let's see what's going on here. Can I understand it better? Then you will find peace for yourself. Does that make sense? And then when you have peace, it's another place, you like a certain relaxation where healing can grow.
It totally makes sense. And I hear a couple things in that is one, we have to create space to listen. So we're from the busy, 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 go, 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 do, do, do. What do fix, fix, fix to get back to that crazy lifestyle. It's like, that's not going to work because to listen to a significant other, you have to get rid of everything, all the other noise and sit and actually be one with the other and listen and not be thinking of the 10,000 other things going on, but be present and just present with the other and just listen. So what I hear you saying is the same thing. You need to create that space to just sit and listen. I know with my health crisis, I had so many signals inside. My body was screaming at me, but I was so busy. I didn't pay attention and just go on to the next thing and the next thing. And then finally, when I didn't pay attention for so long, it's just like game over, girlfriend. Like I've given you every signal there is, and you're just not listening. You are not paying attention, and I can't hold you up anymore because you're like using me and abusing me. So yeah, there's just no space. And so how much time are we taking to meditate or sit and be still or listen or just be present with our bodies and to let these healing for like these, like you said, these messages come to us.
Yeah. Yeah.
So just one more thing I'd love for you to talk about is in so many, you mentioned that in so many illness today, there's so much mystery. Like people just don't feel well. And it's these mysterious things of like, what the hell is going on? Like, why are we all so sick in a way, one way or another? We just don't feel ourselves. We don't have the energy. We don't have the vitality. We're tired. We're trying different things. So what are you saying is off? Like, is it something cultural or this lifestyle, this time, age? It seems like there's a lot more autoimmune diseases and just mysterious type weird diagnoses I hear of that from friends and families and my audience and peers. It's like just these random things. It's like, what the hell is that? I'd never even heard of it before. You know, it used to be pretty obvious type, let's say, diagnosis. So what do you think's going on? Like, what are we doing individually and collectively in this Western life that's causing us to be so out of balance that ultimately is creating these mysterious type of health issues?
For the most part, I think, you know, if you look at what we've done to our planet and what we've done chemically, there are so many. I think I heard a, like, if you did a study to see how many toxins were in your body, on average, people, even people who eat organic food and eat clean, 72 different chemicals that were not original to our bodies, you know, like they're not part of our natural makeup. We get exposed to chemicals all day, every day, all the time. We get exposed to hormone disrupting chemicals. We are on the go all the time in a way that even with kids, you know, like soccer moms that taking their kid from here to here to here to here, not even having like kids that hardly have time to play in the neighborhood or run in the woods or play outside, you know, like they're going to, if they're playing outside, it's a soccer game and they have to win, you know, or it's a football game. And, you know, so like there's, so one thing is giving ourselves time, quietness, giving and connection to the earth, because the earth is where we live. And we don't spend a lot of time connected to the earth and feeling nurtured by that. And then the poisons and the chemicals that we're exposed to living in the city, you know, in San Francisco, there's a section of the city where there's nothing green. And I saw a painting on the side of a building. It was like a tree. And then there was a little arrow that said tree. And then there was another arrow that pointed upward to the sky, and it said sky, you know, like, so like if you live in a big city, you may never see a tree or hardly ever see the sky, you know, and we think that's okay, but it creates imbalance. And then the nutrition. So nutrition is important, you know, and what we eat and what the processing of our foods and the way that they get to the grocery store, even if they're organic, you know, and how our soil is treated and the soil doesn't have the same nutrients that it used to. People often ask me, why do I always recommend a vitamin? Because so few people eat food that comes straight out of the ground, that's organic, that's full of nutrients and fresh, you know, like even at, excuse me, at Whole Foods, they have this spray that they spray on all the vegetables, you know? So like how many days have those vegetables been sitting there in bright light? Bright light destroys many vitamins. And then you pour water over the top of it and that destroys vitamins. And so then you're eating something that's supposed to be full of vitamins and fresh vegetables, you know, and all of that stuff, but it's still like been depleted in so many ways. It may be traveled from, you know, South America to get to you, you know, in your grocery store. So there, all of those factors play a role. Like, so it's a big picture and all of those factors play a role. There's only a few things that we have control over, right? We have control over what we eat. We have control over how we exercise. We have control over spending time outdoors and getting, so that some choices that we make that we could make better. And then there are things we don't have control over, like how many chemicals we get exposed to, or the fact that maybe you have to drive 40 miles to go to work, or the fact that, you know, you have to sit in an office cubicle and be exposed to certain kinds of lighting and things like that. So everything to me, it's like all about balance, but there are ways that you can mitigate the imbalances. So it's always about having a positive attitude, always having an attitude of I can do, I can heal, I can be okay, and looking for the positive in whatever situation you're in. Like people ask me about like avoiding certain foods or eating certain foods or whatever, but you know, you can't get away from the toxins that we've been exposed to. Like when Fukushima erupted, there's billions and billions of gallons of radiation that are in our ocean, you know, and so that affects the ocean, but it also affects the land. And so the grasses and the foods that the cows eat And, you know, so, but if you can't get away from some of those things, so you just have to live your life as well as you can and deal with the toxins in a way that supports your body, you know, and find ways to live the best life that you can, basically.
I love that. And is there anything that's just pretty standard protocol to help, like the mitigation in a way of regular acupuncture or regular this or regular that or regular space or meditation? Like, what are these lifestyle choices that you suggest we do build in, whether we have a health crisis or not, but that is a daily or weekly or just a regular practice to make sure that we're giving ourselves, our body, the love, the energy, the space, the time, the nature, the vitamins, whatever we may need? What is there anything that you prescribe as a protocol on a regular basis to help it, to sure. help our bodies and our, you know, cope with the environments that we're in?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I do. I mean, and again, everybody's unique and individual, but acupuncture is amazing. Because, and so of course I recommend to my patients that they have acupuncture regularly, because what it does is it resets. So it's like a reset of your body's energy so that you're balanced. That's the purpose of acupuncture, is to balance your energy, and then your natural ability to heal, your natural ability to be well, rises in you. Things like meditation help. You know, there's a lot of science. You don't even have to meditate for very long. Like when I first started meditating, I was meditating 3 minutes a day, because I figured, okay, I can do 3 minutes. I can do 3 minutes of anything. So I committed myself to 90 days of 3 minutes a day of meditating, just to begin that journey of going inward. And it really began to change me. So within a month, I craved 7 minutes. So I went up to 7 minutes. And within 2 months, I was up to like 10 to 15 minutes. So now I have a habit of having 10 to 15 minutes of quiet contemplation every day. But you can also, even if you don't have time to meditate, you could wash your dishes in a meditative way. Anything you do, if you're focusing on it and focusing your awareness on it, it can become a meditation. You can make food in a meditative way. And so when you make your food, like my friends, I'll say they love my food. My food is very, very simple, but they love my food because I put my attention on it and I pour my love into it. And so when they eat my food, it's alive and full of love, you know. So you can pour love into whatever you can at any given time. And you can spend 3 to 5 minutes a day meditating a little bit. And you just start to begin to pay attention to things around you, and to build your awareness of your surroundings and your life. And the more you build your awareness, you see, a lot of times we're busy with what's in our minds, with our wounds, with our traumas and all of that. And we are not even present in our lives. And I have myself been one of those people who's not present in my life at all. You know, as a surgeon, I probably had I didn't have a lot of awareness of myself as an interacting human being, you know, so I was busy trying to save lives, but I wasn't really aware of who I was myself at the time, you know?
Yeah, you're speaking straight to me. So I think we're all so guilty of that. And we just live in these very busy lifestyles, and it always seems like there's more to do, more to get done, more to fit in. And there's very little space to be present, pay attention, listen, breathe. You know, I just notice, like, oh my God, I'm not breathing. And Christina, just settle down and just take 10 deep breaths and just settle, you know? And even with an awareness, I'll find myself right back in that energy again, that very chaotic, fast paced, like over busy. And it's like, oh no, let's pull back, settle down, slow down, breathe, listen, take a pause. But we're not building in any time for the pause.
Yeah.
Well, we're approaching the end of our time together. Thank you so much. This is just such a gift you're offering us from your very unique perspective, like blending these two worlds together. I like to close by asking all of my guests to bust a myth. Is there anything that you come across on a regular basis in your life or your practice that you'd like to call out, that you say, you know, I just believe it to be different and I'd like to bring this awareness to people instead?
Well, I think that especially when you have a difficult time with your health, that the myth is that it's hopeless. And so I invite people to to believe in their possibility of healing wherever it is, and to never give up. And because sometimes we get to a place where it's so dark that it feels like you want to give up, and we believe some of the stories that we hear, you know, but there's always another direction. There's always another possibility. So look for those other possibilities.
I love that. Well, thank you so much. Well, thank you for sharing some of your keys with you. I'll make sure to put a link to your book in the show notes, so the listeners where this resonates can pick up a copy and really delve into the rest of the keys that you have in your book and where you share your wisdom. And thank you so much for the work that you do. Anything else you'd like to do? Can people reach out to you? Can they come see you?
Sure. Yeah. They can come see me. They can reach out to me. My website is hearttoheartmedicalcenter.com. Would love to connect in any way.
Awesome. Well, thank you for the work that you do. You make the world a better place.
Thank you.
If you're inspired by today's show and you would like to learn more about My Money Coaching, here's what I need you to do. Head over to Kristina.com/call. That's KRISSTINA.com/call, and book an appointment to speak with me. In less than 30 minutes, we will get absolutely clear on why you're not earning enough no matter how hard you work, why you can never get ahead no matter how much you earn, and what you need to know in order to finally have the time and money freedom you're working so hard for. Remember, you're not alone. 95% of Americans are one life event away from financial crisis. I will be the first person to teach you why this is the case and how to be in the other 5% that has no fear around money. No one can do this alone. You need expert help. I've helped everyone from modest earning professionals to those earning 8 figures per year get off the financial hamster wheel and finally win the money game. I look forward to helping you too. Head over to Kristina.com/call and book your call with me today. I'm Kristina Wise. Thank you for spending your valuable attention with me today. We will meet again soon.